It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I am here as your president to proclaim before the country and before the world, this monument will never be desecrated. Our founders launched not only a revolution in government, but a revolution in the pursuit of justice, equality, liberty, and prosperity. No nation has done more to advance the human condition than the United States of America. Here tonight, before the eyes of our forefathers, we will proclaim the ideals of the Declaration of Independence as we did 244 years ago. We will not be tyrannized, we will not be demeaned, and we will not be intimidated. No enemy on earth can match the overwhelming strength, skill, and might of the American armed forces. You are the fearless sentinels who stand watch over all that we cherish and everything we hold sacred, priceless, and dear. We support the courageous men and women of law enforcement. We will never abolish our police or our great Second Amendment, which gives us the right to keep and bear arms. We believe that our children should be taught to love their country, honor their history, and respect our great American flag. We stand tall, we stand proud, and we only kneel to Almighty God. In the face of lies meant to divide us, we will show that the story of America unites us, inspires us, includes us all, and makes everyone free. America's destiny is in our sights. America's future is in our hands. And ladies and gentlemen, the best is yet
God. All right, Sandy Rios with you on this Monday, the day before the election day. And that was a video that was made from the appearance of President Trump in South Dakota at Mount Rushmore. Remember, I was there, loved it. Oh, my goodness. And I just thought it was a good reminder this morning. I have to tell you, right or wrong, I'm going to say this to you. I have never felt so optimistic about what's going to happen tomorrow. Not so much because it's a feeling, and feelings are not trustworthy, but these are my feelings. I sense that the American people have awakened in a mighty way. I sense that Christians have awakened in a mighty way. Oh, there are exceptions. I could talk about John Piper. I could talk about some of the other disappointing treatises, but I think overwhelmingly, resoundingly, Christians are understanding. We are finally kind of taking a really deep look at what's happened to our country and how we have let the values, the principles slip through our fingers in pursuit of a cushy life. We've had things very easy. Maybe even we could just say that our relationship with God we've taken for granted. We've taken for granted His blessings. This threat to our sovereignty as a nation has been a slap across our faces, and I think it's a slap across our faces spiritually, too, and I think there's a reevaluation. I'm going to give you some of the reasons why I'm optimistic this morning. You may have seen, I'm just going to run you around the country here for a second. At a Trump rally in, now look, you, some of the, my opponents will say this is because I, you know, it's all about the enamoredness of people to Donald Trump. No, it isn't. It's about the preservation of the country. That's why people are coming out in droves. They see what the left is doing and they're not down with that. They actually love their country. That is a response to that. And President Trump is the one verbalizing. He's the center of the eye of the storm. He is the leader of those who love this country and want to restore its greatness in all the best ways, not in the bad ways. And so in North Carolina, there was a line in Hickory, at least a half a mile long. I saw the pictures of the people. It's like out in the country, and they're lined up just forever. And so that's North Carolina, which is a battleground state, which, by the way, as I understand it, don't have to count their ballots for, they have 9 days. 9 days to get their mail-in ballots in. So that's not a good thing. And then, of course, we looked at Texas. Texas, Joe Biden had a huge bus that was crossing Texas. He had planned several rallies. I believe this was on Saturday. And lo and behold, who showed up but a bunch of Trump supporters in their trucks. And they surrounded, they just escorted, quote unquote, Joe Biden's bus. They planned to escort him wherever he was going. In fact, I think it was outside of San Antonio. And so the Biden supporters are accusing the Trump supporters of I should find their exact words, but basically intimidating. They accuse them of running into, I believe that's the wording, of one of the Biden supporters' cars. No one seems to know anything about that. But guess what? The FBI is investigating it. They have nothing else to do, you see, besides investigate this alleged report of a truck of a Trump supporter. Now, look, if he had rammed them, killed them, whatever, and even if it's true, someone needs to look into it. I'm not sure. The FBI, what do you think? The FBI? You think they might have other things to look at? By the time we end this discussion today, you will understand why the FBI should have plenty to do and don't seem to be doing it. But nevertheless, in Texas, that's what happened. President posted a clip and said, I love Texas. And then Alan West, who's now the head of the Republican Party, former Congressman Alan West, good friend, had a few things to say himself. Let me see. He said, three Trump supporters have been executed, one in Portland, one in Denver, and one in Milwaukee. A leftist mob attempted to storm the house of the McCloskeys, threatened to burn down their house, rape Mrs. McCloskey, and then kill them both. Where is the liberal corporate media's concern about that real violence? Additionally, none of what your question implies is accurate. It is more fake news and propaganda. Prepare to lose. Stop bothering me. Maybe Soros can cut y'all another check in 2022. So that was Alan West's response. Oh, I love Alan. And so look, I'm sure we'll find out if there is actual evidence that some Trump supporters, but the point is the Trump supporters in Texas were not down. I mean, they were not. Look, I've seen videos of it. They were just having fun. They just went out waving their Trump flags and decided they would escort Biden's bus. And that's what they did. All right. So then that's not all that happened. Of course, there was this big rally in Arizona. And as a matter of fact, Adam, let's play a little bit of what people were listening to. This is 96 miles of Trump vehicles lined the highway in Arizona. Let's listen to clip 13.
The guts and it's the glory, 100 stripes, 100 stories. It's the pledge of allegiance on the 4th of July. It's them handwritten letters from home. It's them sleepless nights alone. It's his newborn baby he left with his wife. Mr. Red, White, and Blue.
So that was playing as all these people were 96 miles lined up on the highway in Arizona. I just wanted you to hear it. I thought that was also very moving. Now we're finding out there are so many Trump supporters breaking out with rallies in blue states and blue areas. I'll give you three. This was reported by Fox News. Chesapeake, New Jersey. A video posted to Twitter shows hundreds of vehicles on a congested Garden State Parkway as people in a pro-Trump convoy got out and waved Trump 2020 and pro-police flags. Woohoo! We shut it down, baby! We shut it down! One person is heard as the camera shows traffic at a standstill in the northbound lanes. In New York, a Trump supporter captured a line of cars with pro-Trump flags between Seaford and Montauk in Long Island. The Daily Beast reported that. And a similar lineup was seen in New York State on Route 25. A Jews for Trump caravan was also reportedly seen on what appeared to be the Mario Cuomo Bridge near New York City. And then in Maryland, which is, you know, we call it the Republic of Maryland in the D.C. area, witnessed another caravan of Trump supporters in wheels. Also in Pasadena, California, a suburb of Los Angeles. So there, people are coming out. Let's see. Yeah, I want to also, now here's another one. This is in Beverly Hills, and perhaps some of you saw that, but if you didn't, it's pretty amazing. Beverly Hills, of course, is Beverly Hills, by the way. I've been there. I used to live in Los Angeles. I used to live in Pasadena, South Pasadena, California. And Beverly Hills is just gorgeous. I mean, it's, if you've ever been there, it's, you know, it's the home of the stars. At least the downtown area used to be absolutely gorgeous. Well, that's where the Trump Freedom Rally was held. And in, you might, just to put this in perspective, in 2016, President Trump lost in Los Angeles to Hillary Clinton by, well, Hillary got 2,464,000 and some votes. Donald Trump got 769,743 votes. So she beat him resoundingly. Beverly Hills is a stronghold for Democrats, and yet these supporters went out on Saturday and were having this USA Freedom Rally. But of course, that wouldn't be left alone, would it? Because soon black-clad mask protesters came, and you could see them in a video peeling off one of the guys waving a flag. They surround him because they always do. They just, you know, it has to be 10 to 1 for them. And they have to hit from behind. That's the kind of guys they are. They're all about, like, sneaking up. They hit him with a pipe on the back of his head. They pepper sprayed him. About 10, I'd say at least, maybe 8, I may be exaggerating, might have just been 8 people coming around him and trying to beat him. They did beat him, but he did survive. We saw him with the police, and that happened in Beverly Hills, California, on Saturday. Philadelphia, by the way, is kind of going crazy, too. Let me just tell you, this is a tweet. I don't know this person, but this is a tweet. It's remember Otis. I live in the bluest of blue areas in Pennsylvania, the type of area where people destroy your yard signs, damage property, key your car, admonish you on the street for declaring your candidate, or threaten your life. I'm now seeing at real Donald Trump flags and banners flying all over. And then a person another way in says, same here in Albuquerque, and I live in the hood. And this is from another person. One of my friends is a 75-year-old combat vet. One of the nicest people I know, helps all of his neighbors without question, lives with his family and wife in a row home in Philly, put a Trump sign in his window. He has had to call the police 3 times because of death threats by neighbors. So that's the conflict that's going on. By the way, in Philadelphia, with many people, and I think they're right, think that the race is going to come down to Philadelphia. And now we know that it's going to take, the mayor of Philadelphia said it's going to take easily 7 days after the election day to count the ballots, because, you know, they got business to do, and they wouldn't, you know, they got stuff to handle. And so the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania has asked for the names of people transporting the ballots and the locations of where ballots are stored and counted, and the left is apoplectic. They're going crazy about that because we wouldn't want to have any kind of supervision on something like that. But that's what's happening around the country, and I wanted to make sure I told you about it. Meanwhile, what I want to talk to you about next is the plans of the left for tomorrow and the day after and the day after and the day after. Oh, they have plans, all right. They have really intricate, dangerous plans for all of us, and actually it's been spelled out. We've had a leak of some of their Zoom calls. We have their plans in writing, and people that I know on Capitol Hill are boarding up their houses because the police have told them that they can't help. So they're on their own to protect their homes. We're going to talk about that next, what the left has in mind, because I don't want you to be caught off guard when all hell breaks loose tomorrow night if Donald Trump wins. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for healthcare. And here's why. Not only is it time for open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also when you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. For the typical family, switching to MediShare saves about $500 a month, which is a game changer for a lot of people. Think what you could do with that. But if you join right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. So that's another $170 you'll save. And MediShare is really different. It's a community of Christians who share each other's healthcare bills. More than 400,000 people are members, and they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills. So yes, they can handle your bills too. This may be the time to make the switch. Join before November 30th for the additional savings. It's so easy to find out more. They're great to talk to. In fact, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Here's the number. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
If you've fallen behind in your credit card payments during the shutdown, you're probably feeling some added pressures. And even a brief history of late payments can lead to a big drop in your credit score. But you don't have to solve these problems alone. Trinity Debt Management can help. We'll work with your creditors, put a stop to late fees and other penalties, and make a plan that helps you get caught up. We'll also consolidate your bills into one easy-to-manage monthly payment and negotiate much lower interest rates. Not only will you find immediate relief, you'll save thousands. And don't worry, it's not a loan. It's a smart way to get back on track. All you have to do is give Trinity a quick call, and we'll take care of the rest. Right now, no one really knows what the future will bring. But one thing is for sure. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Here's the number.
Call 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
At Liberty University, we believe in honoring service. That's why we offer first responder and military communities deep discounts on all of our 450-plus online programs. Military students, veterans, and spouses pay just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and $275 to $300 per credit hour for graduate and PhD courses. First responders receive a 25% tuition discount, and those who qualify may be able to use both discounts for even greater savings. It's our way to say thank you for all you do. To learn more, text AGREE to 49595.
Violence against conservatives is on the uptick. In San Francisco, as many as a dozen people were injured, several taken to the hospital after Antifa disrupted a pro-Trump rally. The organizer, a black conservative, he was sucker punched on camera, several of his teeth knocked out. A woman wearing an American flag t-shirt was assaulted, an elderly man knocked to the ground. In Ithaca, New York, a mob of socialists stormed the local Republican Party headquarters. At least two people were injured, including a 60-year-old woman. Her shoulder was dislocated. And in Kansas City, homeowners received mysterious letters warning they had been targeted because they were pro-Trump. This is what happens when Democrat leaders tell their followers to absolutely harass Trump supporters. This is America, folks. We fight our battles at the ballot box, not in the streets. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern at ToddStarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We're facing an administration and a potential coup and a potential insurrection where efforts to criminalize this are going to be even greater. Understanding that everything that we're doing now in this moment is laying the groundwork for what is going to come. We're going to see potential fighting all over the country or in some hot spots, right? We've already seen that. And so how do we work together across the country to help support each other no matter where we are and maximize our impact by doing similar things on similar days at similar time? You know, some of the stuff that shutdown DC is doing, some of the ways we're thinking about this, that could be replicated in cities across the country. We've been working on a target map and a framework for scenarios. So we began to put together a list of things we want to know about in the city. So where are all the police stations? Because it's good to know where the police are. Where are all the key government buildings? Where are all the media outlets? Who are the Trump boosters? So we're talking about what would it take to surround the White House and have people do stuff. We can divide it up easily with affinity groups. We have to be willing to put our bodies on the line and take on some discomfort, sacrifice, risk in order to change things. So again, chaos is a soup by which change emerges. Let's get cooking. Again, we didn't cause the war. We didn't ask for this war. Many of us are here because we want to fight it. We want something different. What are we willing to do? We are going to be in a crisis, but we want it to be one that we are creating. We want to make sure that we are on the offense and not the defense. We want them to be responding to us and us not responding to them. It's got to go. Trump's got to go. There may be some people that are willing to break the windows to get into the government buildings. Like, if that's what we need to do, then we shouldn't fight about that. Let's do that. Let's take over the buildings.
All right, that's Lisa Fithian, and lucky for us, we have actually been able to, some kind person, helped us kind of get a glimpse into what the left is planning, and it's kind of an insider who leaked these Zoom calls, and it's actually on a website called sunriseexposed.com. We'll put that link on our Facebook page. If that were the only effort to disrupt and destroy and create revolution in this country, but it is not. I've asked Mike Waller to join me this morning. Mike is a good friend, but he is much more than that. He is a national security expert. Let me just tell you his qualifications before we talk. He's a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy. His areas of concentration are propaganda, political warfare, psychological warfare, and subversion. He's a former instructor with the Naval Postgraduate School. He was an instructor lecturer at the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School at Fort Bragg. And there's a lot more to say about Michael, but he joins us this morning in person. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, Sandy.
You know, Michael, there's just so much to read about this, and I have been studying it this morning. Who do you think is the greatest threat? Kind of give us an idea of the breadth of the threats, and who do you think, where's the tip of the spear here?
Well, if you listen to the FBI, it's the boogaloo, the threat. If you read websites of what the left and anarchists and communists are up to, like you just did from that Zoom call, you know the threat to our absolute constitutional government is coming from these anarcho-Marxist groups that Joe Biden would never denounce by name.
All right, so we have people, look, we've got these federal workers. One of the Zoom calls is federal workers who, you know, hate the country. And they openly discuss how they're going to undermine and even shut down their agencies and obstruct, which that's not too much news, Michael. That's what they've been doing for the last nearly 4 years to President Trump anyway.
Right.
But Black Lives Matter and Antifa, are they the ones planning the most violence from your perspective?
They're planning the most violence, but there are other groups, too, that don't necessarily have a name or that are that operate like Al-Qaeda or ISIS did, meaning they don't have formal membership or a definable hierarchy. But anybody who feels like it and feels like going along with them can commit acts of violence or sabotage in solidarity with what they're doing, and then the groups take credit for it. And this is where the danger is. You've seen in a couple of places in the state of Wisconsin, And I think in the state of New York, where you have had insiders to the state governments who were warning Antifa, BLM, what was going on, what the authorities were going to do, and so forth. You certainly have that also in the federal government in Washington, D.C.
Do you think Washington, and I want to talk more particularly about what they're planning in D.C., because that's a concern to all of us, but do you think that all right, let's talk about that for a second, because I've been hearing some responses. I'm finally relieved to know that it seems like some people are doing some things in D.C., but tell us what the threats are there. I read one that they're planning on shutting down the White House.
Right, and there's a hashtag, #ShutDownDC, and there's a .org with the same name, and they really want to shut down Washington, D.C. So when you're talking about shutting down the capital of the world's only superpower and the greatest country in the world, and you see the authorities really haven't done a lot to stop it, and in fact, the local authorities have done a lot to facilitate it, you've got a big problem here. These are not just protesters who oppose a war or who want some, you know, pro-abortion or whatever else they're doing. These are people who actually want to overthrow our government and our constitutional way of life. One of the groups has actually written an alternative constitution of the United States for the United Socialist States of America. And so these are people who are committing federal crimes It's a federal crime to conspire to overthrow the Constitution of the United States, and that's what these people want to do.
You know, I want to just stop and play a clip for you, because this morning there was a clip, Bernie Sanders, he's talking to AOC and Ilhan Omar and Ayanna Pressley, and I think they're the only ones on the screen. It's also a Zoom call that's been, you know, co-opted, and I want you to hear what he has to say. This is clip 7, Devin.
We understand that electing Biden is not the end all. It is the beginning, okay? And I think as the result of the work that all of you have done, Biden's proposals in this campaign are a lot stronger than they were in the primary. Yeah. And his proposals are stronger. Do they go as far as we would want? No, they don't. And we're not giving up on our agenda. But you know, and I know that at the end of the day, the only way that we're going to provide quality care to every man, woman, and child in an affordable way is through Medicare for All. And we ain't giving up on that struggle. All right? We're going to introduce Medicare for All. We organize our people to make sure that Biden becomes the most progressive president.
All right. So do you believe, Michael, that Bernie Sanders is connected to these revolutionaries who actually are willing to do violence this week and the weeks to come? Do you think he's directly connected to them?
Yes, I do. And here's why. He would be in a very strong moral position to advance his political cause by denouncing this violence, by separating his party and his what he calls his progressive movement from the violence. What instead he is doing is he's using Marxist-Leninist buzzwords. You saw him use the word struggle. That's a Marxist term, armed struggle. So they're doing unarmed struggle, which is still a revolutionary organization. So he's talking about using Joe Biden as a Trojan horse to advance a, quote, progressive agenda. And this is not the Teddy Roosevelt progressive agenda. This is what the Marxist-Leninists themselves call progressive agenda. They're progressing towards something. And there he's talking about socialized medicine when he says free health care for all. Sounds a lot nicer than socialized medicine. So he's talking about advancing socialism. He's using the Marxist term struggle, and he's talking about using the presidential candidate as a Trojan horse. You notice this year, none of the extremist parties, like the Communist Party and the Revolutionary Communist Party and these other extremist groups, they're not running protest candidates this year. They're all throwing their support behind Joe Biden. Bernie Sanders was with them in the past when he was a congressman. He was with them when he went to his honeymoon in the Soviet Union, and he's with them still today.
If there's no doubt this is an organized effort. And now, Mike, we talked about, like in D.C., they plan to shut down the White House, whatever that means. That doesn't sound good to me. I'm not sure how you do that unless you do something violent. But that's what they're planning. And these federal workers on their Zoom call are talking about shutting down their agencies. That's a hint at violence, too. And, in fact, I think they even talk about guns. The people that have the guns are the ones that have the power. So we're talking about potentially very violent acts, but there are also plans for individual Trump supporters. Now, I'm talking about D.C. still. And as I understand it, they were able to get information from the Federal Elections Commission, and now they have a place where you can go and enter a zip code, and you can find out where actually Trump people that have supported Donald Trump financially live. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, I actually found two Trump supporters in my neighborhood, which is a shock. I thought I was the only one.
All right. So
yeah, I went on the app and I saw it.
You know,
you push.
Go ahead.
You go on a street name, and then it'll show in a blue or a red tab, and then there's a yellow tab for something else, and then you touch it, and then it pulls up the name and address of the person. And the FEC record, how much money they gave to who in which election cycle.
Wow. You know, Natural News it really steps out on this. And they say, they predict that they're going to assassinate Trump donors. Do you think that seems a little far to me, depending on how things go here? I don't think they'll rush to something like that. What do you think, Michael?
Well, they've been talking about murdering police officers for a couple of years now, and they've made good on that. It just takes some radicals to say it and nobody else to stomp it down on their side for some lunatic to actually go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. Now imagine if you had it as an organized effort.
Yes, and I guess the other part of that is that we know that the Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and probably some of the others too, are employing actual criminals who've been released from prison, who are hardcore criminals. I think of Kenosha, Wisconsin, where the young guy, the 17-year-old guy, they tried to kill him. And two of the people he killed, that he killed in self-defense, have criminal records. They're not innocents, like idealistic college students. They're criminals. And so that makes it more dangerous.
These are hardcore criminals. And like the Bolshevik Revolution, they used hardcore criminals to commit these acts of violence because normal people and normal protesters just won't do it. They're willing to get a mob mentality, but not in the beginning. You need someone who's actually murdered someone before to commit murder in the streets.
Well, and we have to point out that they have killed at least three Trump supporters in cold blood. I think of the one on the streets of Portland. He's just walking by, and this guy, comes out from behind this wall and just murders him in cold blood.
Right.
And there have been a couple of others like that. There is a list, I have it in my hand, of the planned riots. They call it riots for Antifa and BLM, and it's probably, I'm just guessing without counting, we've probably got 50 designations here, 50 places. And they actually have a kind of a map, too, of where you can get involved and instructions on where to show up. But, okay, so, Mike, the other part of this is, what are authorities doing? Okay, let's talk about D.C. What are authorities in D.C. doing to stop this?
Well, not a whole lot. First, you have several jurisdictions in Washington, D.C. You have the District of Columbia Metropolitan Police, which answers to the mayor, who supports BLM Antifa. And then you have the federal authorities. And I've been urging the White House to federalize the D.C. police and the D.C. National Guard because the mayor has actually taken away some of the police's non-lethal devices for crowd control, leaving them either to have to run away or shoot people, which will make great video footage. And that's what these guys are looking for. So you have, for example, I live on Capitol Hill, and we already have tents that have been around. It's illegal to camp on public parks in D.C., and you had people in tents who are not your regular homeless people, and they've been there for months. And there was a big tent that was put up just the other day across from the Heritage Foundation, and these are people in their 30s who do not look homeless.
And so, well, I have seen those tents. I have seen those tents across from Heritage. I didn't even link it to this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the white teepee that's one, and then there's another big tan one that just went up the other day. Some of these are homeless people, but some of them are Antifa organizers. And I talked to one of the homeless guys who's lived on a bench for a couple of years. He doesn't want to live in a tent. He's quite content living on the bench. And he threw out some of the Antifa people first because homeless folks are pretty territorial. And he said they were from Portland. He heard them talking about...
Gosh, we're going to run out of time here. A couple of things real quick. Gun laws in D.C. are very strict, but you can have one in your home, can't you, to protect yourself?
Well, thanks to the Heller decision and all the support from gun rights people, you've had Supreme Court decisions now where D.C. is a shall-issue jurisdiction now. You have to take a course, and you have to go through police screening, but you can get a concealed carry permit. Anybody can. You can, because you come to D.C. a lot. You can get one. Just take the course, and then it's like $100, and then they fingerprint you, and they take the picture, and then you have to register also. That's a permit to carry, but then you have to register every weapon that you have in D.C.
My understanding also is that the White House is actually erecting this fence that's supposed to be impenetrable around the White House right now. I'm grateful to hear that, but that doesn't help you homeowners, does it?
No, it doesn't. And the beat cops, who I talked to quite a bit, they said, look, we are really sorry, but we expect to be so overwhelmed that if you guys are in trouble, you're going to be on your own.
All right. Well, listen, Mike, on a personal level, you're a national security expert, but you're also a guy with a family. And so we will pray for you, for your safety tomorrow. And what I'm hoping, Mike, I don't know, 30 seconds. Do you think that there could be such overwhelming victory last night that they will lose their steam?
There could be, or it could drive them in the opposite direction. Who knows?
Well, that's true. Who does know? Because we can see firsthand that they are unstable mentally. I mean, who thinks the way they think? What normal person has such bitterness and destruction in their hearts all the time. Mike Waller, Center for Security Policy. We'll put your article, by the way, on our Facebook page. Thanks, Mike. Sandy Rios in the morning.
May the Lord be your vision, your wisdom, your shield, your portion. And at a time like this, may He ultimately be your King. I'm Charles Morris, inviting you to join me for Haven Today all week in light of America's presidential election for a series called Be Thou My Vision.
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at AFR.net.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
Today I want to talk about America's Middle East strategy. There hasn't really been a clear, articulate strategy in the Middle East that is convincing to me. And one that should be focused on more, should be really the primary goal in the Middle East, is to protect Israel.
Saturday afternoon at 2:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The city lies four square, its length, width, and height all equal, 1,380 miles for each dimension. The city's wall is 216 feet high. 12 gates around the city, with each gate made of a single pearl. Streets of gold so pure, they're translucent. No need for a sun. God's glory lights the city. No tears, no pain. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. If you wonder why our culture is in meltdown and on the verge of civil war, look no further than our rejection of God and His moral authority. God wants us to live well and to live long in this rich land He has given us. What we must do is get back to following His 10 simple rules for living. If we worship God and Him only, refuse to take His name in vain, treat our parents with honor, refuse to harbor hate toward anyone in our hearts, remain faithful to our marriage vows, refuse to take anything that doesn't belong to us, refuse to lie, and refuse to give way to lust for people or things, God promises it will go well with us and we will live long in this land. If we refuse to worship Him and obey Him, well, we wind up where we are today. It's simple. Obey God and live, or reject God and die. What will it be, America?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The integrity of tomorrow's elections is being threatened in a number of ways. One that's particularly ominous has to date been little discussed and apparently gone uncorrected. Incredibly, no fewer than 28 of our states, including 10 swing states, have their vote counts processed in a foreign country on George Soros-tied computers. What could possibly go wrong? The short answer is plenty. Although federal and state officials have long been warned about this arrangement, and evidence that it actually was exploited to alter key outcomes in 2018, the vulnerability persists. And now, there's no time to fix it for this year's races. What can and must be done is ensure that these 28 states contemporaneously share with U.S. authorities the data they are generating and sending offshore for tabulation. That will allow at least a needed check on the results tallied abroad. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
MDHHS Director Robert Gordon today did two things to try and stop COVID-19 cases. First, he lowered gatherings at weddings, parties, banquets, and non-residential settings from 500 people down to 50. Next, Gordon ordered Region 6, which is much of up north Michigan, to go from Phase 5 to Phase 4, which means all Michigan school children will now need to wear masks in class.
The next order is a lot closer to home for many in that the state now wants any gatherings indoors, particularly in restaurants or bars, limited to six or fewer people. And when in a restaurant or bar or other public setting like this, the business owner is now required to take names and phone numbers of patrons to assist in contact tracing. MDHHS is saying it's reserving the right to enforce these orders, either criminally or civilly, with fines up to $1,000 and 6 months in jail.
Now, the Department of Health Director, Robert Gordon, is telling us tonight that he believes it's the law that was put in place during the Spanish flu about 100 years ago that gives him the legal right and opportunity to do this, as he doesn't want to have to use jail and fines to make this thing work. But he says that's what he has to do. He also says that he wants to have some muscle against businesses, and they have the opportunity to lose a business license if they aren't enforcing these orders that have now been put out this afternoon.
Wow. That's today in Michigan being put in place. And that was a report from WDIV in Michigan. That's the next latest draconian measure employed by the governor of Michigan to control the people of Michigan. It is really unbelievable, and yet that's what's happening here the day before the election day. And you wonder, is this affecting Michigan voters? And if so, in what way? Patrick Kolbeck is our guest. He's a former state senator, two terms, from Michigan, and an aerospace engineer. And he is an activist in Michigan. Thank God for that. And he joins us. He hasn't joined us in a long time, so it's great to have him back. Patrick, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, Sandy, it's great to be with you, and it's great to have an opportunity to still be able to use my phone to get out to the outside world here in Michigan.
Yes, I can't even imagine it. It must be maddening, just maddening. So
it is. It's so frustrating, and it's so obvious that there's a tie between COVID and the election integrity, and that's what I'm hoping to walk through a little bit today.
Yeah, let's do it. You have an article, which we will put on our Facebook page so people can share it. COVID can't be an excuse for subverting election integrity. So at least for that part, let's talk about it. The Michigan Supreme Court, this is unbelievable. Are they Republican appointees, or was this really a bipartisan, if a court can be bipartisan?
Yeah, no, it was actually a very bipartisan decision. It was a 7-0 unanimous decision. If you listen to the governor, she says it was a partisan decision. And how did she get away with that? Well, there was actually two decisions hidden within that opinion. So one dealt with specifically her authority to issue emergency orders under the state of emergency. The state of emergency in Michigan expired April 30th. The governor appears to be the only one who really didn't understand that. But it took the Supreme Court decision on October 2nd to cement that. She went on and tried to extend that another 28 days, and the effectivity of that Supreme Court decision was immediate. So she was just trying to buy time, so now she's using administrative agencies, such as the Department of Public Health statute and the Department of Health and Human Services here in the state of Michigan under Director Gordon, to issue essentially some of her same executive orders she was issuing under her state of emergency authority, now through the public health code. And that's concerning, and that's another unlawful act. And if you actually dig into the actual public health code, it's under the epidemic provisions in that public health code. And according to the Center for Disease Control, Michigan has been below the threshold for an epidemic since June 1st.
Well, how can she do that, and why isn't anybody holding her to account?
Oh, amen. She shouldn't be able to do that. We should have our lawmakers, which are Republican control. We've got a 58-52 majority in the House. We've got a 21-17 majority in the Michigan Senate. And I hate to say this, but they've been more or less complicit with many of her acts. And they filed a lawsuit. They've gone through some motions, but they haven't highlighted the unlawful nature and just simply asking questions about what's the scientific basis for some of these orders. There is none. And it's getting very frustrating. And my concern is that because they've been silent on this for so long, she is getting more and more emboldened with more and more orders. And it's power hungry. And she's using it as a tool to subvert monitoring of our election process. And I think she's actually using it to subvert the integrity of that process. And I outline exactly how I think she's doing that in that article that you referenced.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because it's not just the control of the restaurants and taking people's names and all those draconian measures to make people's lives miserable. But it has practical applications, as you said. People go to the polls tomorrow, so how do you expect them to try to control voting based on these emergency orders?
Well, remember, Michigan is one of those swing states. And based on the analysis that I've seen, all Donald Trump has to do is pretty much win a state like Michigan or Pennsylvania, and he'll get to the 270 threshold to be president and resume another four-year term. So here's why this is a concern, not just for people in Michigan, but people all across the nation. First of all, you introduced me with background in aerospace engineering. When I was in engineering, I worked on space station. We did a lot of what are called failure modes and effects analyses. You try to figure out all the different ways your system can break. And when you're talking about astronauts in space, there isn't a lot of AAA cards that are going to get you the help that you need in time, right? So when it comes to our election process, I took that same approach and looked at it and identified four critical components of our election system that have to be monitored, and we have to ensure the integrity of those components. One is the voter registration database. That determines who's actually eligible to vote. In Michigan, it's called the qualified voter file. Number two are what are called poll books. Essentially, that's an extract for each one of the voter precincts of that voter database that say, here are the people that are eligible to vote, and here is enough information about that voter to be able to validate their identity. The third is ballots itself, so your actual vote. That's a pretty important thing. And then the last is the actual tally of the votes, which is separate from the ballots, and it's a separate activity using separate servers. So those are the four key elements. And here's what they've done to subvert the integrity of all these processes, mostly under the cover of these unlawful, I believe, COVID orders that they're putting out. So number one on the voter database, and this is going to be hard for a lot of your listeners to believe, but the state of Michigan actually partnered with an organization called Rock the Vote. And Rock the Vote has been given access to actually add entries into the voter registration database as a third party with dubious oversight of that process. So if you wanted to enter in Elvis Presley 1,000 times and at different addresses, you could enter in Elvis Presley in there.
Wow.
Theoretically without, and so you tee it up for the next stage of the voting process when people submit their votes. You go into the poll books, and the poll books, that's used at the voting precinct, and you use those to verify the identity of people who submit ballots, whether that's somebody voting in person or whether or not that is an absentee ballot that's been submitted and put into a drop box somewhere. If that poll book is driven by the data in the voter database. Well, what they've also done is enabled people to register to vote online. Well, if you're registered to vote online, you can't verify a signature. Well, that's the key identification that we use to verify the identity of absentee voters. And I think it's the absentee votes that are most vulnerable in this process. If you don't have a signature to verify against, how are the poll workers supposed to verify that identity with the information in the poll book? And then along with that, what we've noticed, and, you know, we don't have, we've been limited due to COVID rules on the number of people that can, number of poll challengers that can monitor the election processes. And specifically in the city of Detroit, we've actually been excluded to this point from monitoring the ability, the actual process of matching a ballot envelope signature to the signature that's supposed to be in the poll book. And obviously that's a recipe for disaster. The other element underneath I know Halloween was October 31st. Sorry to scare everybody after Halloween, but there's a lot of stuff going on here. They pushed ballot drop boxes where Mark Zuckerberg put $250 million towards an organization called Citizens for Tech and Civic Life to put drop boxes in predominantly Democratic areas without monitoring. This opens the door for a bunch of prefab ballot drop-offs. And so if you've got a whole bunch of ballots being dropped off and you have no access to actually verify that the identity of absentee voters are being verified, that is a serious recipe for disaster.
So, Patrick, let me see if I can be clear. I can understand clearly. I know Detroit and these big cities are always, they're the disastrous places for all of us. I'm from Illinois, so Chicago was our nightmare. And then there's Los Angeles and New York and all of that. And that's where the left really seems to be do their most devious doing. But these things that you're describing, is this statewide, these changes? And do you see them doing these nefarious things? Okay, statewide.
They are statewide, but I'll tell you, some of the most egregious infringements upon poll challenger access are in the larger communities, so the metropolitan area, particularly the city of Detroit. And so they're putting out in the county of Oakland County, which is going to be a very important county in this election, they put limits on the number of poll challengers that can witness these poll worker activities. And I'll just give you an example. They're limiting to one poll challenger for 20 municipalities. So talk about having a busy night.
Oh, my goodness.
And designed to subvert the election. There's no other way to put it.
Yes, and so what mechanism is in place to fight something like this? Is there any mechanism? Who is the governing authority, the opposition authority, who could do something about this?
Well, the Michigan Republican Party should be doing a lot, and they are to some degree. We've got about 1,200 poll challengers ready to go, and there's a whole team of lawyers ready to go. I wish it didn't have to come down to a bunch of legal actions, because guess what? That's not going to be determined on election night. But I've also helped form an organization called the Election Integrity Fund in Michigan. We've got over 500 poll challenger volunteers that are ready to go off, and they've been trained. They're ready to deal with this. Ultimately, we just need to get access to the poll worker activities, all of it. I mean, if we had a lot more time, I could go into some of the other activities that I think are very concerning that are happening in the back room. But bottom line is, the best way to prevent this election from being stolen is, number one, get out and vote. That is very important still. Number two, though, we need to, and my focus right now is on the absentee ballots. That, I think, is where the biggest opportunity for election integrity subversion is. It's absentee ballots. We need to verify the identity of all the absentee ballot voters before their vote gets tabulated. There's a basic process. When you're going off and verifying the identity of an absentee voter, what you're doing is you're looking at the outside of the ballot envelope, and you're seeing if that signature matches the signature in the poll book. If it doesn't, that's supposed to be pushed off to the side in a provisional area and not counted and put in the tabulation machine. Once that ballot envelope is pushed downstream into the tabulation, the first step is to tear off the ballot number from the ballot so you don't know who voted how. And once that happens, there is no recourse. It's down, and it's going to get counted as a vote.
But what can people do? But, Patrick, what can people do about that?
Be a poll challenger. Make sure that we're able to verify that process.
It's not too late to be a poll challenger?
Sign up for it right now. Go to Election Integrity Fund. I'm not going to say it's you can at least help the folks that are in the poll challenger right now, because they're going to be pulling multiple shifts. There's all kinds of things you can go off and do to volunteer to make their job a little bit easier.
Okay, so they can still do it.
Yeah, they can help out and go to, and you can send an email to info@electionintegrityfund.org and get it in there. But the other thing is, tell everybody about this. Because as Christians, we know that evil likes to hide in darkness. If we shine the light on this and let people know what's going on, it is going to be much more difficult for them to go off and pull this off.
Okay, info@electionintegrity.org, info@electionintegrity.org. Email them and let them know that you'd help.
Electionintegrityfund.org, electionintegrityfund.org.
Fund.
And if you go to
letsfixstuff.org,
I've got a whole breakout of this process with diagrams and stuff, too, that can help people at letsfixstuff.org.
Letsfixstuff.org. Okay, we have 15 seconds. Is this governor going to win re-election? Governor
Well, that's 2 years from now. I'm hoping she gets impeached before we ever have to worry about that.
Yeah. Well, that's a thought that brightens our day. Patrick Colbeck, thank you for your service to this country and to the state that I know you love. Michiganers love their state, and for good reason, so they got to take it back. All right, Patrick, thanks so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.